What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Cigars and Everything Else podcast. We're in episode 83. My name's Jared. I got Denzel with me. And we're here to talk some cigars and a little bit of everything else.
Yes, sir.
But first, episode 83.
Yeah, man.
Who will we honor this episode to that wore the number 83?
Of course, you know, we're going football. Mm-hmm. We're going wide receiver. Position, you know what I'm saying, 80s, that position. We there. And we're going with a legend of sort. Hall of Famer. Andre Reed. Andre Reed with the Buffalo Bills. One of the players of the Super Bowl attending the Buffalo Bills. Super Bowl attending. 4 years in a row and couldn't get it done. So, I mean, hey, look, it's shout out to him and Thurman Thomas and all them boys back in the day. They was getting it done. They were getting there.
So, yeah.
It takes a lot to get there, especially four times in a row. But, man, they had to be some long faces on that fourth time and they couldn't bring it home. Them faces had to been long. I wish I could see it. I wish I could picture it back then.
The face of wanting to give up, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just.
You talk about the face of defeat? Oh, that's the face of defeat right there.
Yeah. But yeah, I wore the face of defeat before in life, but it couldn't have been
Not like that. You see how bad it looked after going to it once and losing?
Yeah.
Imagine by the.
And do it again. Second time, and again. And again.
Like, third time. Fourth time. But that face is real long. But yeah, Andre Reed. Shout out to Buffalo Bills, man. Man. So, Super Bowl attending.
Hey, man, today is honored to Andre Reed, the great attendee. So we're going to get into our cigars from this point forward, man. I will be smoking this week a Plasencia Alma del Fuego. Here you go. It's not going to show, but it's got the closed foot on the bottom, which is a cool little
look to it.
And a box press, of course, you know.
Box press. Gotta love it.
Give you a little bit of specs on this. This is going to be a Nicaraguan origin. Nicaraguan binder, filler, everything. It's just Nicaraguan through and through. Wrapper all through. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's the answer.
Yeah, hey, and guess what? I'm right there with you, man. I'm going through and through, too. But, yeah, but shout out to Plasencia. Shout out to... everything they do. Man, I went to the cigar shop today. I went to Cigars International and actually picked up a Plasencia, my favorite one, the green band.
Yeah.
And I took it to the counter. I'm like, that's my favorite one. The guy was checking me. I was like, man, you got some good taste. I just sold two boxes to the guy just a few minutes ago. Two boxes of that green boy.
Yeah.
Plasencia, man.
You know, whoever it was. And shout out to them for dropping that. You know what I'm saying? What's that? That's like some two pair of Jordans, ain't it? Like,
yeah. Cause you do 210s, that's at least 250. It's 250 a piece. Yeah, man.
Shout out to that guy supporting his smoking habit. He really likes them.
Drop 500 on some cigars in one go. That's something I've never done. Never done.
I haven't either.
Not yet. Bucket listed.
Yeah, bucket listed. We're bucket listed. You know what I'm saying? But now.
All right, so I'm going to go into the cigar I got today. So I was going to have a debate of where I was going to go. You know, we always go pick up several cigars on our cigar hunts. And today I grabbed the Ashton. What I got? I'm going to run down what I picked up today. You know, it's like going cigar shop is like, you know, for like somebody who loves music and loves like going through crates and digging through the crates. Yeah. That's what cigar shop is like for me. Like you go and you see what good finds you can get. Almost the same thing. It's almost that same feeling. It's like, what can I find?
Good analogy.
Who can I give some attention to right now? Who's an eye grabber? What's an attention grabber? And that's what it was for me today. So Ashton, I haven't seen, well, haven't touched the Ashton in a long time. Grabbed the Ashton Heritage. You know, stuck out to me. He's like, okay, Ashton Heritage. I like it. Let's try it.
Yeah, let's go for it. With that.
Yeah, me neither. So, hey, it brought me back to Ashton. It's one of those things that, hey, they throw something out, try to reel you back in. And I think, hey, check this out. So Alec Bradley and their Black Market line. Mm-hmm. I feel like Alec Bradley is trying to make a stand back into the cigar world and come through with a lot of oomph, because they're putting a lot of emphasis on that Black Market. Like, I've seen in the Cigars International that I went to today, they had at least 6 different variations of the Black Market. It's pretty dope. The presentations were dope. They stepped up the presentations and taking that Black Market, which is their top cigar out of all the Alec Bradley cigars. Black Market is one of those ones that has gotten some notoriety. So it looks like they're taking that Black Market and saying, oh, I we got something that's good that people like. We're going to stretch this. So they stretching it. It was, like I said, like 5 or 6 different types of Black Markets that they're going to with these different labels and colors and all those things. Yeah. So it was really cool to see. Wasn't enough to suck me back in. They didn't grab me. But it was like, all right, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. Yeah, I wasn't going to let them get me. I wasn't going to let them do it. We're going to let him do it.
Alec is done it enough, man. We moving on from Alec.
Be a sucker today.
But, man, you know, you got that Ashton, which is interesting, man. You know, we learned that that's Arturo Fuentes. So
So back to Ashton. So we went back to Ashton. I did jump into the realm of Cohiba, and I was debating on smoking this one today. Red Dot.
Okay. Yeah.
Red Dot. I love the Blue Dot. I love the Black. Have never had the Red, so I grabbed the Red Dot.
Okay.
So maybe I'll say that for next episode, because I am interested in seeing how that Red Dot does. Haven't done a Cohiba on a show in probably a couple of years now. It's been a minute. Been a minute. So maybe it's time to bring Cohiba back to the show and, hey, give them a platform and say, here we go.
We ain't had neither one of us had a Cohiba on the show since the Cohiba episode, probably.
Since the Cohiba episode. And that's about 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Mm-hmm.
They don't put out a whole lot to choose from anyway. Like, you know what I'm saying?
They don't. But it's always good to go and grab those ones and had a little reminder of how great Cohiba is. Yeah. You got to have that reminder every now and then. So, yeah. So shout out to Cohiba, though. But ultimately, man, we talk about presentation. We talk about names. This one grabbed me. See this box, man?
Little
casket of sort.
Yeah. Death in a box. What you got?
It caught my attention. So, Muestra de Saca. So, from Steve Saca. And we know Steve Saca from his Drew Estate days. And he left Drew Estate, maybe 10 years ago, and decided to start his own thing, the Mi Quiera line and all those great cigars under the Dumbarton Tobacco Company. So, Steve Saca, big name in the cigar world. Cigar in the box. Got the Medal of Honor, it looks like, on the box. He has his theme. We talked about themes. And it says Unstolen Valor. Unstolen Valor on the side.
Okay.
So, slide it open. And we got a cigar right there.
And what that cost?
I believe this one was $20.
$20 for all that, huh?
$20. Hey, if you're gonna spend $20, you better get a presentation with it. So that's what we got. That's what we're looking at.
That's how you move some tobacco right there, man. Shout out to Steve for that.
Yeah, shout out to Steve Saca. And so far the cigar feels nice. This nice little oiliness to it. Nice texture to it.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting big things. Come on, Saca. Don't let me down. Don't let me down, Steve.
It's only a band on the foot?
Yeah. That's it.
Okay. That throwback edge look, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So to give a little background about it, like I said, same with yours, Nicaragua went through and through. So wrapper, origin, binder and filling, all Nicaraguan. Okay. All the way through.
Cool.
Okay. So I'm going with a V-cut today.
I went straight on mine.
V-cut. Mm-hmm. Do I got matches? I got matches.
You smell that cigar?
I didn't.
Smell like premium?
Smells like premium. So far, so good. No, got to get a little pervy with the cigars every now and then, you know, a little pervy. No shame in it.
Mm-mm.
Hey, look, man, check this out. So look, we talked about our cigar representation, like representatives. And I think Ocho heard us, man. I want to say 85 heard us. I've been seeing him on a show with Shannon Sharp.
Every time now, right?
He got a cigar now. I'm like, Ocho, I think you heard us. He on there with a cigar every single time. Smoking the cigar talking.
My man, we love you. Hey, man, I wanted you to be the representative, man. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So,
but we had to say Cam because Cam was just, he was undeniable with it.
Undeniable, man. You know, truthfully, I like Ocho better. You know what I'm saying? As a personality, but Cam is undeniable. So he's the representative.
Yeah.
You know, no, Cam, cool. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying nothing against it, but I just lean more towards Ocho's personality.
Right.
But yeah, so yeah, I've been noticing it. I noticed the same thing. I meant to bring that up to you at some point. But, it's mine. But yeah, I look at Ocho with his stick. Yeah. Every time I see that joke, he got one in his mouth now. I see my boy do it.
Better do it. That's what I'm saying. If you're going to represent all the way, do it like my man Arnold did it.
But it's going to, you know, that's a lot to ask of people to do it like Arnold. Well, Arnold is a unique one.
Yeah, unapologetic and everything.
Yeah. Hey, but speaking of these sticks, man, let's touch on something real quick before we get into the first topic of everything else, man. I want to say this. We discovered recently some information that broke my heart to hear. Talk about these cigars, and we always give our reviews and our opinions of them, a lot of times we always state Aficionado rated this cigar a 90, whatever. And, you know, we're very complimentary of it because of that. This particular cigar that I'm smoking today was rated a 92. This Plasencia Alma de Fuego, you know. But what I learned is Aficionado, and correct me if I get the information wrong, because you taught me
this. Aficionado
makes their ratings based off of, what is it, 10 points for every category. They got like the different categories to give.
Different categories, about 10 points. Yep.
Yeah. And they only smoked cigars for about 10 minutes. And then they add up, they tally, and that's how you end up with 90, whatever, or 100, you know, whatever it is.
Through my research and through my findings of trying to figure out, okay, because the ratings don't always match our experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see that rating, and that rating is eye-grabbing. It grabs your attention and says, let me try this cigar because this cigar is rated 95. It's got to be great. But then there's a lot of times where the cigar is not matching our expectations or matching our experience. It's like, why? How does this keep happening? Like, how are we finding so many cigars that are rated in the rating that they're rated, but they're not living up to that moniker, that number that it's supposed to live up to?
95 or 94. 95. It's like, it feel like 94. Like,
and it smoked like an 88. You know what I mean? This ain't 93 octane. Right. You know what I mean? This ain't super premium. And we come to find out that through their rating scheme, they'll have a group of people, they'll come together and they'll sit and they'll smoke a few cigars and they'll smoke the cigars for about 10 minutes at a time and give their rating, which some of it you can say is valid because how that cigar presents in the beginning does matter. We talk about it, but that doesn't give the whole picture of the cigar because you'll smoke that cigar in the first 10 minutes and hate it. You sit with that cigar another 10, 15 minutes, another 20 minutes, and you look at that cigar like, this is nice.
Yeah.
And that'll change that shifts your ratings and shifts your thoughts about the cigar. And there's no way that you can truly rate a cigar in 10 minutes. It's impossible. Right. And sometimes we feel guilty for rating our cigars and we'll smoke them for 40 minutes on the show.
Yeah.
And still feel a little guilty. Like maybe we might have shortchanged this one or maybe we might have overrated it. Let's see how it finishes.
Yeah. Because the cigar is broken down in thirds for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Your first third ain't the same experience as your second third if it's done right. And your second's not the same as your third, your final third, if done correctly. So with that being said, in order for you to come to a conclusion that a cigar is deserving of an ace grade in the first 10 minutes because it made you feel a certain way about it in the beginning. It doesn't mean that that construction is going to hold up the entire way throughout it. You really don't have a good idea of the draw in the first 10 minutes because, I mean, it could be crap right off the bat. That happens. But at the same time, you could end up running into some issues along the way. Or you don't know if this cigar has any complexities to it. You don't know all the notes of it because you might pick up on some tasting notes later in the cigar that didn't appear early on in it. So it's just like that. That was kind of heartbreaking to know that these guys are really misleading us with these ratings that they're providing because you just don't know the whole spectrum of what the cigar provides. And yeah. People go out and they put these ratings on these billboards inside these lounges and shops. And you see, ooh, rated 93 by Aficionado. Let me go get this. And that don't mean nothing. It don't mean nothing. It ain't worth nothing. The paper it's written on because the rating is just kind of like.
I mean, I hate to come at Aficionado like this, but Aficionado, y'all got to do better if y'all gonna rate these cigars. You got to do better by the people. Got to do better by the people.
You got to smoke them. You can't light them up. Sit with them while you fill out your paperwork. And when you finish your paperwork, the cigar done. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like
you start your paperwork as soon as you take your first puff. And you're already starting to judge the cigar, like right off the bat. All right, I'm giving my rating, my grades right now. Yeah. And I'm two puffs in. Come on now.
Yeah, man. That ain't right, man. And that ain't right. For the actual consumer. You know what I mean? Like the consumer that believes in those ratings, that buys your magazine and judges it off of that spends money based off of this stuff, man.
Yeah, because I guarantee you that there's a huge population of cigar smokers and cigar novice who really take those ratings to heart seriously. I mean, we were once those guys.
Yeah.
I can speak for myself. I picked up a lot of cigars based on that rating. Placard on the cigar in the shop. Not on the magazine, but the shops have them on the cigar that says rated by Aficionado 95, 94. Oh, let me grab it. Get it home. Ain't what I thought it was.
Yeah. And they wear it like a badge of honor, you know, and they should because they put the work in. But come on, man. Grade them properly, man. You know what I'm saying? It's more than that. But with that being said, you know, moving forward, when you start seeing us label it the real review, know where that comes from. Don't take it personal. You know what I mean?
Don't take it personal. Just understand that we're really vetting these cigars. We're not taking it lightly. When we smoke these cigars, we're paying close attention to everything that we're getting from the stick. And we're no holds barred about it. No holds barred about it. Like, we are really taking our time and understanding everything that we enjoy about cigars, and we're measuring up against our scale to say, hey, this is what we want and this is what we got.
Yeah. So hopefully if somebody comes across one of our reviews, they, you know, they can take it to the bank and not feel like it was some foul play in it or that nobody, you know, we didn't take the time to give you a real answer. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a responsibility that comes with that. You know, whether you feel like it is or isn't. You know what I'm saying? When you're making decisions, when you're saying stuff that affects people's decision making with their money, there's a responsibility you have with that.
And you know what? I have no problem taking and rating these cigars and putting them on our back. I have no problem.
Right. Hey, man, with that being said, we'll switch gears, man.
Yeah. Hey, before we get into what we were going to talk about that we already kind of pre-discussed, I want to bring up something to you real quick. It just hit me out of nowhere. Like, man, I want to talk about this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Old President Trump or former President Trump or presidential candidate Trump got some new shoes, man. My man got some kicks. You seen that?
Yeah, he got them Air Trump.
Man got some kicks. Air Man Trump.
Old boys.
Yo, when I first saw it, I thought it was AI. I thought it was somebody trolling or something. But then I saw him with the shoes and the press conference, and I'm like,
he legit. He's serious.
He legit with it.
legit dead serious, man.
I don't know. Do you feel like that's dope or what? Where you at with that?
I'm so torn on one level, you know, it's hard to call him a racist when he dropped a pair of sneakers. You know who that's for. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Those sneakers fine, too. Ain't fine.
And then on another level, it's just like, you know, Trump, do you even wear sneakers? You know, that's where I'm torn. And I'm like, do you even wear sneakers, bro? Like, you know, you old dude. Like, man, are you part of the sneaker culture? Like, are you just making money off of it? But yeah,
they ain't no New Balances. They ain't no dad sneakers though. They are not grass cut sneakers. These are not dad sneakers.
They some flashy sneakers, man. They like, I don't know what to compare him to, man. But they he tried. So, that's what I mean. Like, but he put effort into it. He didn't just go put out some cookies.
I give him that. But hey, look, man. If there was any president who had a missed opportunity on dropping some dope sneakers, especially while as a president and after Obama, yeah. you missed the opportunity. Barry, that should have been you. Air berries or something, man.
Yeah, man. He should have some basketball shoes, man.
Any hoop.
We would have went out and supported that.
You know, Come on now. Them Jones would have been right neck and neck with Yeezys. Maybe not Jordans, but them Jones would have been neck and neck with Yeezys.
He could have did it. He can still do it.
Hey, Barry. Man, if you're smoking a cigar and you're watching this episode, I want to see them BOs come out.
Man, the BOs got to come out. But now you got to step your game up, though, because Trump done dropped his, and, you know, he done set the bar. You know what I'm saying? So you can't come out with some here. You know, and Trump here, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
you gotta beat them Trumps, man. You gotta beat them Donalds, man.
Get with Kanye, man, to go design your pair. Y'all got that Chicago connection, man. Go make it happen.
Facts. That'll be smart. Yay, Obama. I like
would
it.
Would be. But yay,
Jordan. Like Donald Jordan, Trump, Jordan like Chicago, Obama. Too. But yeah. Hey, look, so, I mean, we're talking about Trump shoes. Possibly Texas culture vulturing. So, Beyonce dropped a record, a country record.
Yeah,
and a few of them. Some people not so happy about that. Mainly the country music community. Mm-hmm. And we know it's not the first time that there's been an African American who's jumped into the country scene, by no means. As a matter of fact, K. Michelle, a lesser known R&B star, released a country album. You know, there's been other Aaron Neville. He's what's that?
She from Memphis though, ain't she?
And she from Memphis. Aaron Neville, you know, Darius Rucker. Yeah. Do the country music from Hootie and the Blowfish.
All right.
So it's not the first time that, you know, African Americans have jumped into the country realm.
Lil Nas X.
Okay.
Lil Nas X.
But even in the same vein, though, like the way his was received, like they didn't want to play his on the chart on the stations. He had to go get Billy Ray Cyrus on his record in order for them to go ahead and push that record.
Yeah.
To make it a more viable country record. Yeah. So, do you feel like there's another side of culture vulturing? Or is it just saying, hey, all right, this is culture protecting? Or is it just saying, hey, no, you're not vetted strongly enough to say, hey, no, you are a country, you are going to be recognized as country music? Or is it just, hey, look, man, if I release something that's genre-based and it fits the genre, play the record.
That's my saying. If I drop something that applies to the genre, play it in the genre record. You know what I'm saying? Where it belongs. Put it in the category where it belongs. Now, with the Lil Nas X situation, I can understand that because it's almost a parody is what it felt like, even when it was out. You know what I'm saying? And it was received.
It did feel like that.
But, so I get it with that one, but with the records Beyonce has dropped at this point in time, they're legitimate country records. You know what I'm saying? The country records.
Yeah, legitimate country records. Like, not even a gray area with the country. Like, even Nelly. When Nelly did a couple of country joints back in the day with, I can't remember who the singer was. Was it Garbage? And Garth Brooks, was it?
It wasn't Garth.
Forgive me if I forget
who it was, but yeah, I remember.
But he had a legitimate country singer on the record with him, and it was a country song. But like that's like still a gray area. Okay, it does feel like similar to his hip hop style records. You know, the sing rap style in the country twang with the country lingo. So that was still gray. But like what K. Michelle's done and what Beyonce's doing, it's definitely country. It's definitely country.
Without a doubt.
And it seems like it's being received as reverse culture vulture. You know what I mean? But then in the same case, she from Texas. She from Houston.
She's from Houston.
So it's like she has every right. Just like you said with K. Michelle, she's from Memphis. Yeah. She's from Tennessee.
She's deep into that history. That's country territory, Memphis, Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? Like Nashville, Tennessee.
And likewise with Houston.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So we got cowboy boots all up and through Texas. I'm about to start wearing cowboy boots and a cowboy hat.
Look, man, the sisters wear cowboy boots out in Texas. You know what I'm saying? It's an ode to the culture. So the fact that she did it, I'm from that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, now, if you don't want to accept me, that's on you, but I'm from that. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I understand her doing it. And there's even a little theory out there that what she's doing is she's going and doing, she's got like a three-part, you know what I'm saying, album thing she's doing, and they're saying that she's hitting all the genres that
were
African-American that have been left behind. So the house music was the first one with the last album. And now she's in the country. You know what I'm saying? So, and I think there's a third one. I think she's just going to go back and hit all the genres that
it's black a rock and roll or something.
Used to be music. Cool. Probably rock is probably the third one, I think. Rock and roll is the third one. So everything
which was black music
or was involved with from the infancy and left, she going back to put her piece in.
If you talk about blues music and country music is almost neck and neck.
Country music is
a direct line birthed right out of blues.
Yeah.
Directly out of blues.
Yeah.
You know? So
And nobody denies that. So I mean like But it shouldn't even be, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to just say that there's a whole nother layer to this too. Talking about country music and culture vultures. So I don't know what else you had to say. Cause I might take this in a whole nother direction, another twist.
Mm-hmm.
But country music, especially this newer country music, has a lot of hip hop elements.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of hip hop elements. So not only does the country music of old directly stem from blues, but now we're having a lot of country music. I mistakenly came through this country station on Spotify, I think it was, and I'm hearing some pretty dope country music. I'm like, yo, this actually sounds pretty dope. And a lot of the background music and the way they're approaching it sounds a lot like hip hop.
It had beats with
triplets back in the day, like when the triplets was really hitting. It had triplets in the beats and the cadences were.
Not just hip hop; they taking directly from trap and incorporating it into country music. So, like you said before, it was blues, and now it's trap. It's still the genres are still melding into one another. So it's almost like you can't say as much as you want to keep that genre for yourself. It's open as long as it's taken from others to continue to move its genre forward, then it's open to anybody who comes into there and gets a piece of it. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm with you on that. I found myself enjoying more confession time. When I hear some of them country songs, I found myself enjoying some of them country songs more than I enjoy some of these rap songs I hear now when I hear them. And
they cleaner with it. They nice with it.
I never thought I would have ever said that. I'm surprised I just said that on wax. Like, I recorded that. Like, you know what I'm saying? But
we got the tape. It's
on tape now. Like, you know what I'm saying? But you gotta be open to it, man. Like, I don't want to make this. I don't think it's entirely a race thing, because, like you say, we've had, like, you know, Darius with the and Hootie and the Blowfish and stuff. Like, we've had that in the past. I want to say it's more just a you don't want to recognize an artist outside of what you originally know him for. I want to say that's more so what the issue is. You know what I mean?
Is she too big of an artist to binge genre?
That's what I'm thinking.
Especially that genre.
Well, and this is why I say I don't think it's a race thing. I think it's literally an issue with country being very picky about what type of artist they let in, because Taylor Swift got kicked out of country. You know, all forgot. Yeah, she started as a country artist. When Kanye came and took the mic from her and said, Beyonce had the greatest album, the greatest video, she was accepting her award as a country artist. She started trying to do pop, and country was like, nah, man, we ain't calling them records too pop. That ain't country. So she was like, all right, you want to tell me I can't do that? I'm just gone then. I'm going to just go do pop all exclusively since y'all want to act funky.
Yeah, good luck with your genre.
Went on to become the biggest artist in the world after that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's bigger than race. Country is just, they're trying to protect their genre a little too hard. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And you can't do that. And I think hip hop has learned that too. You can't protect your genre too much that you lose that notoriety that can come from it, new fans that can come through it, you know, something you can put on their shoulders to say, we're going to move the genre forward so we can stay relevant. That's probably how rock and roll died. I mean, not saying that rock and roll is dead, but it's not the genre that it used to be.
Yeah.
It's not the genre it used to be. Blues wasn't, like, genres pass. And they don't stay relevant as long as they could, because they try to stay too specific. You have to stay too much to a particular format that says this is what that is. Now, hip hop, I'm not gonna lie and say, hey, we've gotten loose. On the flip side, hip hop's gotten loose with the genre.
I agree.
A lot of blurred lines.
There's a part of me that understands what country's doing. There's a part of me that wish we would have did it with hip hop to an extent. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But at the same time,
no, that's not hip hop. That's something else. We have to, because it was a point 5, 6, 7 years ago. We're like, no, we got to start calling this something different. We can call it a subgenre of hip hop, but we have to put a name on this. We have to put this not necessarily in a bottle, but we have to have some kind of separation, a perforated separation of some sort to say this is something just a little bit different. It's a little different.
Yeah, I wish we'd have did it. We didn't do it, and it is what it is. You have to let art become what it's going to become. Like, that's the only way we continue to push forward. We're not doing classical. People aren't doing classical music the way they were in the 1800s. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? There's somebody that was born in 1900 that was mad as hell. Classical died. Like, you know what I'm saying? What happened, man? Don't nobody put out no... What's this jazz? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Classical music? Come on, put that Beethoven on, man.
Yeah, somebody felt that way at some point, but
it's crazy.
We ended up with rap out of all of it. You know what I'm saying? And now rap is becoming something else, and we're ending up with something new. Like, and it's just going to continue to be that art will always expand, and some of what it becomes will be better than some of what happens along the way.
You have to have that fine line of allowing growth, but then a fine line of defining. Growth and definition, you got to find those parameters, healthy parameters.
Yeah. So. And if you have an artist from another genre that comes in and does it in a respectful way to your genre, and they doing it the right way and following all the rules, and they not doing nothing out to bring the quality of your work down.
Yeah.
Take it as a pat on the back, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like they showing love, like, because it is what it is, man.
Because that feels like more respect than not. They're respecting the genre. It's owed to the genre, and it's pushing the genre forward and keeping it relevant.
And that's what it ultimately comes down to, man. If Justin Bieber drop a rap album tomorrow and it's fire, call it a rap album.
If it's dope, it's dope. Yeah.
If it's dope, it's dope, man. You know, just let it be. But that's on country, man. You know, they want to keep it the way they want to. And they open the door. I could potentially be a fan. I've already began to start hearing stuff that's like, all right, that's all right. Maybe a year from now, I'll open up all the way and be like, all right, let me see what else there is. But
add it to your playlist. When it's on my playlist.
Maybe we can get there. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm getting to the point where I'm like, some of this ain't that bad. But if y'all want to close right. the door and not allow some of it to continue to grow and develop, you're going to close the door on certain listeners, man. That like what you're becoming.
Yeah. And you're doing all your artists within your genre a disservice. New fans that they can get.
It's true. Because somebody's going to find one of your great artists through somebody that didn't do it that well.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, man. So where you at halfway? You want to talk about it or want to keep pushing? I mean, it's Placencia. It's Placencia, so.
It's Placencia, man. You know, you got an idea. It's a good experience. it was a little fuego in the beginning, though. I ain't going to lie. It was a lot of spice. It's
fuego for a reason.
I had that punch Diablo the other week. It wasn't Diabloing, but this one is fuegoing, you know, early on. It's smoothing out now. But it's still good.
Hey, Steve Sockers, so far so good with the Unstolen Valor. Really, really, this is a really oaky cigar. I'm talking about strong oak. From the point that I lit it to now, smooth, but strong, like oak barrel type of deal going on here. I don't know if the wood casing had anything to do with preserving that or giving that feel, but I'm talking about like nice, strong, solid oak. Like I feel like I'm smoking an oak tree right now. but it's good though. I like it. I mean, I'm enjoying it.
That's dope.
Hey man, so you sent me something this morning. Brought it to my attention because I was not aware at all that this was going down. So. Pleasantly surprised. I can't say pleasantly. I don't know. I don't know how to feel. I know how I feel, but I don't know how to feel. No Bull Tour. I'm like, what is a No Bull Tour?
A No Bull Tour will be taking place in the upcoming weeks where we will have one legendary Hall of Famer by the name of Scottie Pippen. We will have Horace Grant, number 54 from the Chicago Bulls, first three-peat. And Luke Longley, number 13, I believe, from the Bulls' second three-peat. They have come together. And what they will be doing is going on tour to discuss The Last Dance and how they feel about it. And it's going to be no bull, no BS is what they say. They're going to be telling the true story of how it is and how it really went down because they didn't like how it was presented to the people back in 2020. So now they are selling tickets in Australia to discuss what it was really like playing for the Chicago Bulls under Michael Jordan.
All right. So me, big eye roll. Big eye roll. Eye roll. What are we doing? I mean, like, this to me, this feels like the most unnecessary piece of commentary that's probably gone down in the last 5, 6, 7, 20, 30 years. Keep going. How far back you want to go? Unnecessary piece of commentary. The most unnecessary piece of commentary. You sent me three different videos, and by the time I heard Stephen A. and Kendrick Perkins go at it, Cam and Mace talking about it, you know, doing that thing, and then I got to the final take that you sent me from Gilbert Arenas, and this is probably the first time, as crazy as Gilbert Arenas's takes are, when he makes his commentary on certain things in sports, in the sports realm. But this particular time, he could not be any more right. It's like, okay, so you have three guys. One has three chips. The other has three chips. The other has six chips. And you don't like the way the story was told by one person's standpoint, right? Which we get it. That is the GOAT. This is his take. and telling his story of how it went down.
But hold on, didn't Scottie Pippen do interviews on that?
He definitely did. He definitely did.
Also,
he talked about it. So he had his time to rebut anything that he needed to rebut or challenge any takes or the way he was portrayed or the team was portrayed or the situations were portrayed. He had his moments. Okay. Everybody should have their moment. But you won. You won. Are you disgruntled because you have hardware? Like, Gilbert Arenas, what he's saying was, everything that went down behind the scenes, we don't care necessarily all the ins and outs and how you felt on this particular day, in this particular practice, on that particular game, when the outcome is you won and was part of one of the biggest franchises of the 90s, and you will always go down in history, and you will forever be a champion, and you will forever have rings to show for it, and your name will be in the rafters, and your championships will be in the rafters, and the city of Chicago will always herald you as a championship winning player, unlike Andre Reed, who made it to the Super Bowl 4 times and couldn't bring it home. You know what I mean? But you won. So you want to go and whine? To me, it feels like as a man, this is just speaking from a man's standpoint, you want to go whine about the way somebody told the story about you guys winning. I don't want to hear it. You're going to go whine about how the greatest basketball player in the history, arguably or inarguably, the greatest player in history told his story on how you won, not lost, not how Marshawn Lynch got the ball and didn't win the Super Bowl or didn't get the ball and lost the Super Bowl. And we want to hear that story. How did you feel? You didn't win that game, that Super Bowl. Tell that story. Tom Brady, tell me the story of when the Giants beat you twice. How did that feel? If you want to complain and whine or whatever, or sound disgruntled in any way, tell me that story. I'm talking about just times where you should be disgruntled and tell me a disgruntled story, and you got to tell all, and this is no bull and no BS, and nah, I didn't like the way that story was told. You're telling the story how y'all won. You'll forever be a legend. Go sit down. Enjoy your hardware. Look at your rings in the light and say, ooh, this is pretty. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, team. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, City of Chicago. I'll forever be a champion. I don't want to hear it.
You got the result that you were looking for. Regardless of if in the process you don't like, got you again. I saw it. Got you. Regardless if you don't like how I went about getting the result, I did the best I knew how in the moment. As a parent, right? Think about it for the parents out there.
Think about this.
Your kids are never going to be satisfied with the decisions you make, but mm-hmm. you do the best you can to get the result you all need as a family in that moment.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have talked to them a little more politely, but maybe you didn't know in the moment or how to do it. You did what you thought was necessary in the moment for things to work out in the household. Michael Jordan talked to you mean, was hard to you. He wasn't this nice guy, but he did what he thought was necessary to win at the time. And you got the result you were all looking for. And now, 30 years later, we're going to all go, oh, he treated me mean. He talked to me mean. He wasn't nice. He wasn't a nice guy. He wasn't fun to play with. That's what we're going to do it to him. Y'all sound like some hoes, man. Like, for real. Like. And I got something right here for you. You see this right here?
Mm-hmm.
This is a clip. The Horace Grant interview. Chicago's unhappy bull. And on the cover, him and Scotty here. Scotty's become arrogant and cocky. He can't handle fame. Phil Jackson thinks he can take advantage of me. I don't hear no complaints about Mike. You complaining about the coach. You complaining about Scotty, who 30 years later, you're now going out on a tour to go complain about Michael. too. You know what I mean? Now,
yeah, you didn't complain. You didn't complain about Mike back then.
You didn't complain back then when it counted. You complained about Scotty back then when it counted. Now, Mike, I'm sure. I never attended a practice, but I'm pretty sure Michael Jordan didn't ask anything of his teammates that he didn't ask more from himself. Because Mike has been famously quoted as saying, "I compete against what I know I'm capable of." So I'm sure he pushed you all to the limit he thought you were all capable of, and he pushed himself even harder. So if somebody's asking for you to meet them on their level as a teammate, because this is what I feel like we need to do to win, and we win, it is what it is, bro. Like
we got the like you said, we got the result that we all set out for. When you when you came up through high school and college, and you finally made it to the pros, you had a goal. And for every player, I would assume, in professional sports, has a goal to win a chip. Ultimately, to say I am a champion and I won it all. And I won it all once, but several times. And like you said, you made the perfect analogy of as far as a parent doing what they had to do that was necessary, and their child goes to either be successful or not successful, but they survived. And they complain about the process. When you're just doing what you got to do in the moment, you don't know. Like there's no written way of how to get a result, but you're just doing the best that you know how. But then when you sit back and you look and say, were the results met? They were met. Could we have done it better? Yeah. I mean, you can say to yourself, yeah, it could have been done better here and there or whatever. And you think about it later. But it's so unnecessary to sit there and want to go tell it and talk about how bad something made you feel when you made it through. Because nobody knew. Like if you were the guy, Scotty, if you were the guy, Horace, if you were the guy, Luke, what would you have done? How would you have handled it? Ain't no telling, because you weren't the guy.
Yeah, you didn't carry that pressure.
You weren't the leader. You didn't have that pressure.
You know what Mike had to do versus what most other people had to do? Mike not only had to be the leader in the face of the NBA, but Mike had to be the biggest dog on his team. So whenever there was a beef after Charles Oakley left, who was nose to nose with the toughest guy on the other team?
Mike.
Mike, the star player, the face, the baby, the league's star primary player,
darling, you know what I'm saying? The darling of the league.
The darling of the NBA had to go put his nose in X-Man's face and say, leave Scotty alone. Get away from him. Scotty Pippen, take an elbow to Detroit and go down holding his ribs. Get up. Don't let him see you weak. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's what they want to do. Like, he had to go be big bro to all of y'all when most players got somebody to go out there and be Ron Artest for him. They don't got to be mm-hmm. Ron Artest himself. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mike had to go be the finesse. He had to go be the biggest dog in the yard to make sure
he had to corral the team. He had to make sure Dennis was good. Check on his mental space. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. he had to be everything from the dog to the father figure. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The big brother. He had to do all of those things. And you want to complain? And you won?
And he always gave Scotty his props. He always gave Scotty his props. Scotty was my MVP. Come up here with me, Scotty. Accept this award with me, Scotty. Couldn't have did it without Scotty. How many interviews can you go back and say, see what Jordan said, man? I need more help. My team is weak. My team ain't good enough. Or did Jordan say stuff like, man, we got to do better. We got to be stronger. Well, we could have did a better job. We got to work on this. We got to improve on. Yeah. He never put the blame on his team.
Jordan was a leader of he was a man's man, leader of men, and like you said, no excuses, made no excuses, not for any weak link on his team, whether they were perceived weak link or whether they were truly a weak link in reality. He might have checked them in practice.
We didn't hear about it in public though. Like never threw his teammates under the bus. Always lifted him up. Said that he needed him and he couldn't do it without him. He always gave his props. He gave Scotty all the props in the world. You ever heard the story about when Scotty had his his little game. Like, he had a summer game. He was selling tickets to it in Chicago, and it wasn't selling well back when Mike was playing baseball. So he had, like, he got a bunch of other, his professional friends, and they were going to do, like, a little, just a league. I mean, not a league, but a game. And they were going to sell some tickets and stuff and have people come to the gym, watch some pros play against each other. Wasn't selling well. Mike playing baseball. Scotty hit him up like, hey, man, my event ain't doing so well, man. Would you mind coming to play? Mike like, nah, I really don't want to play, you know, because I hadn't been playing basketball. I just been focused on baseball. And he was like, man, come on, I need you. Mike came through and sold all the tickets for him. They sold out within hours when the word got out that Mike was doing it. Threw Scotty a favor. Mike has always thought Scotty was his guy. Like, they just secretly, quietly hated Mike behind his back. Mike,
that is crazy.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes. The way it's always been talked about in interviews, and anytime I heard Mike, like you said, speak on Scotty, it's always been in brotherhood. That's my guy. And then turn around and see Scotty doing this and being like this towards somebody who's had your back all your career, as it seems. Whether he had it, whether he didn't make you feel like that in private, all we know is what we've seen in public.
Yeah.
You know, and when it comes down to it and how your public image is perceived, he made sure that you were putting the utmost esteem. And now here's the thing. How you felt in private, we don't really care. And I'm just speaking as a grown man, right? Me and another guy, we don't like each other. We don't ever get along. I don't got to deal with you. Just don't make me look stupid in public. Just don't defame my character in public. Don't try to tell lies about me. Don't try to do this to me. Don't try to undercut and take food out of my family's mouth. You know what I'm saying? Like, just as long as those things are good, I got to deal with you. You're your own man in your own world. You take care of your family and do what you got to do. I got mine and my family. I got my business. I got my money. I got my travels that I need to do. I got my cigars I need to smoke. I ain't got to worry about it. Okay? Yeah. It's like, whatever happened in private, let that be. Let that be. Cause now I'm a grown man. We're not on the same team, and we haven't been on the same team in almost 30 years. So I ain't got to see you every day. So now if I'm dealing with you every day, and this is the conflict that we're having in an everyday thing, and our team is struggling, and my performance is looking like this, then maybe I might want to go say something. Hey, this is what's happening because Draymond is treating me like this. So now I'm having this situation. You know what I'm saying? So that's if it's pertinent. And in the moment, let's talk about it. But we don't want to hear this 30 years later. We don't want to hear it. I want to hear how Michael Jordan was mean to you 30 years ago. I don't care. Right. You won.
You won, and you got everything you wanted, man. You got all. Look, man, I remember the 90s. Scottie Pippen got all his props in the moment. We all thought he was good. Like, you know what I'm saying? Everybody thought he was good in the league. You might not have D, but everybody thought he was good. You know what I'm saying? And, like, he got his props in the moment. He was a top guy. He was respected.
50 greatest.
Respect in the moment.
50 greatest. 50
they
greatest.
They gave him that. They sent him to the dream team. You got all of that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he might not even deserved it in 92, but you made it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is the issue, brother? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and like you said, almost 30 years later, you want to talk about it now. D, how long have you known me?
Over 20 years.
How many times have you heard me come to you and complain about people that have wronged me?
Never. I don't think ever. It might have been maybe a half a time. I don't know. Maybe never. I don't know. I can't count.
I think in 20 years, I haven't had a situation that somebody I perceived as somebody doing me wrong. Like in 20 years, like, you know what I'm saying? Deal with it. You just don't run your mouth about it. Am I still friends with some of the people that you knew me to be friends with when you met me? I'm not. But I ain't going to talk to you about it or complain about them. Like, you know what I'm saying?
And that's for people that's probably never done you any.
At times, once together,
and again, these are probably people who never even done it, had any benefit to your to your livelihood, right? It never had any benefit to your livelihood and done you wrong. So now you have more of a case to say, this person did me wrong, because now it's just, there's no equity in it. There's no equity in that friendship. There's no equity in that relationship. But you were attached to somebody who helps you win, who puts you in a position to sell your tickets, to make sure that you were good to go. And okay, there might have been some bad blood back in the day, but how much good has been done from this guy to you? Just go your way. If you feel a way about it, go your way. He's done too much good for you, regardless of if he ain't killed one of your family members, or maybe he sicked your son at your ex-wife. I don't know, but she's your ex-wife. Stop worrying about it.
The word on the streets is Mike didn't like them together. So Mike didn't like that. Mike didn't approve of that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like, even with that, he had you back in that. And from my understanding, they're not together no more. So apparently got through.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Pop's opinion might have finally got through to him. But you such a hoe, you don't care. Like, that's weird, man. Weird. You
men gotta be men. In 2024, men gotta be men. Especially now. Come on, man. Like, you have no reason to be petty. You got money. You got accolades. You're selling popcorn.
Yeah, you're selling popcorn. And Horace Grant?
And Luke Longley. Don't drag Longley. These guys into it too, Luke, man. Yeah, don't.
Luke Longley. Like, Luke,
you should just be happy, like, man. You just be happy you got hardware, man. Come on, Luke. Horace Grant, even Horace Grant, be happy you got hardware. Just be happy you got hardware.
You was good. You might have got one all-star in at some point, Horace. You know what I'm saying? You were the better twin between you and your brother, but nobody wearing no Horace Grant jerseys. Why are you talking now, Horace? Like, you know what I'm saying? Just move on. Your name's Horace.
We don't even recognize you without your goggles. Okay? We don't even recognize you without your goggles.
It's just weird, man. Like, why would y'all do this, man?
It's weird energy. And you know what? But in a sense, it does kind of lean into 2024 and character of men. And just what the landscape looks like. That's just what the landscape looks like in the character of men in 2024. It's just it's a new energy, man. It's a new energy.
Man, it's a disappointing energy, because ultimately you waited until 2024, almost 30 years later, to just run this dynasty into the ground. Like, you know, the image that we all held of the dynasty, you just running it into the ground.
And honestly, whether he agreed with The Last Dance or not, I honestly, and this is somebody who was not a Bulls fan, I am a diehard Pistons fan. To me, The Last Dance, it helped the legacy. It helped the legacy.
I didn't think it hurt nobody's image. I thought it just told a story personally.
Whether you agree with how you were portrayed, I don't think it hurt anybody's image. I don't think it hurt the legacy. I only think it helped the legacy. And I feel like it brought some names back that some people might have forgotten. People might have forgotten how Steve Kerr, how he was the role he played in that team, versus how people look at him now as just a championship winning coach and somebody who hit a game winning shot. You know, it brought light back to a whole situation that people might not have even really remembered, in a sense. But I don't even think that anybody looked at that documentary and said, ugh, why? Why is what?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think anybody left a bad taste, other than maybe just the players who disagreed with Mike's standpoint and how he viewed The Last Dance. That's it.
But even then, take some of that aside. The facts are the facts. Scotty had a problem with his contract. Mm-hmm. Scotty set out because he didn't want to. He had issues with his contract.
Yeah.
At one point in time, he actually set out for the last play of the game that Kukoc hit the game winner because the play didn't go for him. We watched it happen.
Yeah.
What is there to be upset about it? You don't like how it was spun? It happened. You did it, bro. We all saw you on the bench. We all watched the game and said, why is he not in for the final play? Like, It happened, bro. You had contract issues. It's well documented. It's been documented since the '90s. Yep. Why is it an issue all of a sudden? Like that it's being talked about in this documentary when it was never a secret. Like, so what's the deal? Like Horace Grant, I think he upset because he didn't get to be in it that much. And this is, I don't know if you heard this, but it's said that Horace is mad because he believes Michael Jordan put it out that, that the Jordan rules came from Horace Grant leaking information to the Pistons. But from what I heard, it was said, it was told to Jordan that way. So even if he said it, he got it from someone else.
Yeah, he just telling what was told to him.
He's saying what was told to him. That's his side of it. If you didn't leak it, you didn't leak it. But that's what he was told. That's what he believes. So he didn't have you in a documentary like that. He looks at you as a traitorous individual. Get over it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you wanted more shine?
You should not be over the age of 40 or 50 with feelings like this about another grown man.
That's just how I feel.
Maybe I'm not sensitive enough, but especially like when it comes to dealings with other grown men, you should not be over the age of 40 or 50 with feelings like that towards another grown man over the age of 40 or 50.
Nah, agree. We can end on that note because that's the ultimate answer.
So, yeah, let's get to these final cigar reviews, man.
All right, man. So, for me, the Plasencia Alma del Fuego, is been a lovely little stick here. It started off honoring the name of Fuego. It started off on fire. It was a lot of spice that I picked up on. Very strong woody notes on this. It was just a lot of woodiness and a lot of spice. I can't narrow down what the spice was, but if you like a spicy stick, it starts off like that for you. Then it begins to smooth out a little bit. You start picking up on some coffee notes, and I would say probably some clove notes that you are noticing in this cigar. And it's got a probably more of a full body to this particular stick. It's burnt very well, very good draw, and everything is, once you get into this second, third where I'm at, I would say it gets into that tradition where everything is perfectly blended, like Plasencia is known to do. So you start kind of picking up on some notes that you may not be able to pick up on all entirely, but the ones that jumped out is that clove flavor and that woodiness flavor and some of the coffee notes that you pick up on. For me, at this point in time, I'm going to go ahead and rate this cigar. I'm going to go with a 4.1 for this Plasencia Alma del Fuego.
Nice. Okay. You know what? I mean, I was wondering if you were going to give that cigar above a 4. I think, and I'm going to say this, and don't bad me for it, because you have to rate all the cigars at some point and just say what's your favorite and what's your least favorite. And I'm going to say, I think Fuego might be my least right now. I want to put that Cosega just a little bit above it. But
yeah.
If I had to choose between the Fuerte and the Fuego, that would fall underneath. It is it is meant to be a stronger cigar. I will say that. I do know that it's meant to be a stronger cigar. So if it kind of takes off that even kill of how Plasencia usually approaches their sticks, that's probably why, because it is meant to be a more bold stick from Plasencia, from what I understand. So I think that's what you're getting there. But I'm glad to see you rated it in the fours. I am glad to see
you rated it in the fours. It's a bold stick. It's a bold stick, and you are definitely going to get some stuff that jumps out at you. Normally when we go with Plasencia, I'm always having a hard time actually telling you notes. You know what I'm saying? I'm like,
yeah. Because it's all everything so just, yeah.
Yeah. So you do get a glimpse of that once you start progressing into the stick. But initially, a lot of those bold flavors do jump out at you. And then from there, it kind of settles in, smooths out a little bit. You still pick up some spice within it as it's going. So it is definitely a bold, spicy stick. You know what I'm saying? Okay. It's not for the faint at heart if you're a beginner. But at the same time, where I'm at in the game, I still can respect and appreciate it for what it is. I did put it into the fours. But it probably is one of my, probably does fall at the last of my
okay. But just even though we say it falls in the last of the Plasencia line, it is still a great stick. I still enjoy it. I'm sure you enjoy yours too. All right, man. Steve Saka. Muestra de Saca, Unstolen Valor. I am having mixed feelings because it is a really good cigar. But I will say this. We talked about how aficionado rates their cigars in the first 10 minutes. And we're about 40, almost 50 minutes into the stick. I was looking for more change to happen. And it stayed consistent. So I'll give it a nod to consistency because the flavors I got were pleasant flavors. But I was looking forward to do something else at this point. I was looking forward to do something else. That oak came in strong in the very beginning, and it stayed there. So earth, wood, and oak, and maybe just a little small fruity undertone, like a fruit nut mix, like a if you ever had like a walnut and raisin fruit nut mix, that's what I'm kind of getting off of that. So it is pleasant. It is pleasant. It's real nice. Some light coffee bean, not much coffee bean, but just light coffee bean, but not much change. Not much change. So that is a little knock for me. From some people, it might be great. Some people might look for that consistency and say, hey, I want a cigar to stay even kill all the way through and don't throw anything crazy at me. But me personally, and I'm pretty sure for yourself, you'd like to see those changes happen. Mm-hmm. You'd like to get thrown a little curveball from time to time and see some complexities and see some different things jump out at you throughout your smoke. It just didn't give that to me. But the flavors that it did give were pleasant flavors that I really did enjoy. That oak, that bold oak, I actually like it. I didn't think I would like a bold oak flavor stick like this. But I will say with this one, the way they carried it, Steve Saca, the way you did this one particularly, very nice. Very nice. So overall, with the lack of complexity for me, but with some great flavor, nice creamy smoke though. Nice creamy smoke. Not too rich. Nice, just a little bit above medium body. A little bit above medium body, like that medium to full. Smoke really well. So I want to go ahead and give this one. I'm gonna give it in the threes. It's not gonna make a four. I'll say a nice 3.7. Just because the flavors were really good. If you either gave me a little bit more, I could have got you closer to that four. Maybe a little bit over the four, but just because you didn't give me anything else, Saca, got to give you a 3.7 on this one. But it was a really good stick. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it from the first puff to where I'm at now. But just, I want to see more. I wanted to do more.
That's what it is, man. Well, we have to keep an eye out for that line a little bit more and see what else Steve Saca releases from it.
Yeah, in defense to this, even with these cigars in the coffin and the casket or whatever they call it, they released three different kinds with different names on the sides of the box. So I'm interested to see how the other ones smoke. And I'm going to try them. So it did give me enough to go back to say, I want to see what else Steve Saca has in these lines of sticks here. So I'm going to grab the other ones. I'm going to try them, give them a good smoke. But for that price point, man, you got to give me some more, man. $20 a stick. Got to throw some more at me.
At that price point, I was expecting you to get a little bit more than that you put it that way. But yeah.
For sure.
We'll see. Well, anyway, this is the attendee episode. Mr. Andre Reed.
We showed up.
Episode 83. Yeah, we showed up. So we appreciate y'all for tuning in this week's episode of Cigars and Everything Else Podcast. We out.
Yes, sir.